Something wicked is coming this way, and only fools are ignoring the signs. So it's time you became a financial prepper like thousands of others. Gold can travel anywhere. It's international. It's its own currency. Allocate to gold now, the timeless safe haven asset. Open an IRA with Noble Gold Investments to physically hold coins and bars, and let real, tangible gold, not just paper, save your portfolio as the economy burns again. Right now, Noble Gold Investments offers a free 3-ounce silver American Virtue coin with every qualified IRA. Just use the promo code GOLD to claim your free coin and secure your family's financial future. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com now. NobleGoldInvestments.com.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
RPN is not responsible for the views, actions, statements, or opinions of its guests, advertisers, or even its viewers. The information contained in this program is not to be confused with medical or legal advice. An appearance on this platform is not necessarily an endorsement, but as always, we encourage you to do your own research. Enjoy the show. Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome back to another exciting episode of Red Pill News Live. This is a special Friday edition. We've got the normal show planned, got lots of stuff happening. Got to do a bit of an update on what happened yesterday with the Trump-SCOTUS arguments. Suffice to say, it's looking pretty good. I've also got a special guest who's going to be joining us in the first 15 minutes, attorney Anthony Sabatini. He represents Jake Lang. Jake just spent 20 days in the hole, solitary confinement. They let him out yesterday. We spoke, and he was supposed to be here today. And guess what? They threw him in the hole again. So, if you're just showing up, do me a favor. Help me out by sharing the show. Obviously, it's an unscheduled Friday show, but I've been unable to stream all week because I had no internet, so people might not even know I'm live. People are creatures of habit, and when they think that I am no longer a creature of habit, they might not show up. So hit the like button. Help us out by sharing the show. I'd sincerely appreciate it. Without further ado, sit back, relax, grab your popcorn, because we're going to be right back after this. So recently, I've told you guys about a breakthrough new anti-aging remedy that I've been using that keeps me energized all day long. I just take a teaspoonful of C60 Evo olive oil in the morning, and I notice better mental focus, flexibility, and physical endurance. Now, it's rare to feel improvements this quickly. I also end up sleeping deeper at night, so it's really helpful. Their peptide and ESS60 hair and lotion renewal formulas are exceptional because they really work. And C60 Evo's lab has been manufacturing this Nobel Prize-winning miracle molecule for 32 years in their Houston, Texas, Patriot-owned lab. ESS60 is the upgraded version of the carbon-60 molecule. It's specifically made for both people and pets. It's a potent and effective way for people's lives to be improved all around the world. So maximize your health and enjoy noticeable results with C60 Evo organic edible oils, skin serums, and pet products. You can buy with confidence from C60 Evo, and you can use my personal code for a discount at checkout. Simply go to c60evo.com/redpill78, and then when you're there, use code redpill78 for an additional 10% off your entire order. Once again, that's c60evo.com/redpill78, and when you support my sponsors, you support this channel. All right, my friends, welcome back. Thank you for joining us. I appreciate you being here. We have a lot to discuss today. Let me first give a couple of big shout-outs to some Patriots over there in the chat on Pill. Thank you so much to Water Wizard, dropping a can. Thank you for the support. Tennessee Jed 78, appreciate the cookie. AskWatch 48 says, always look forward to all of your shows, working and lurking. Thank you for being here, brother. Good to know you're always out there. And then, of course, thank you to Porpoiseful, who says, thank you for all you do, Zach. I really appreciate you as well, my friend. Excuse me, let me just make sure we are live over here on all of our requisite platforms. Looks like we are live on Twitter. Are we live on Twitter? Yeah, we're definitely live on Twitter. We're also live on Getter. We're also live over here on Rumble. We're live on, of course, Locals, and we're live also on Pilled.net. All right, you guys, Anthony Sabatini is going to be coming in just a few minutes, but I wanted to open the show today by talking about the latest controversy. This is the latest attempt to try to smear someone in the Patriot community. What you're about to see, we're not going to watch the whole video because I think it's totally unnecessary, but what you're about to see is some commentary coming from some people who you may follow, and I'm not disparaging them. However, I disagree with the characterization of what they're trying to put forward. So, apparently, at some point in James O'Keefe's past, when he was working at Project Veritas still, he was at a bar along with some other friends. They had gone to a wedding, and a young woman was there, also pretty drunk, and she appears to be talking to James and his friend. Now, Kyle Serafin put this footage out there. He's the former FBI agent, or at least that's what I understand. He no longer works at the FBI. He had blown the whistle on, if I'm not mistaken, the FBI's targeting of Catholics and Catholic churches. So he says, this is footage shot by James O'Keefe. He shared it with his team at O'Keefe Media. This is what many of you apologize for this week. Any of you have daughters in college? This woman is half James's age. So, from the footage itself, it actually appears that somebody else is the one recording it. The woman does appear to be younger than James. But the woman also appears to be the one who is the aggressor in this situation. I am a recovering alcoholic. I've been very honest about that. You guys know that. I've been sober for over 6 years. I intend to stay sober for the rest of my life. I don't care if you drink. I don't care if other people drink. But having been a pretty big drinker in the past, I'm fairly, up to date on exactly what happens when people go to the bar. People get wasted, and they behave in ways that they wish that other people didn't remember. And now in the age of cell phones, in the age of pretty much zero privacy, if you're doing anything in front of a camera, you're pretty certain that somebody else is going to see it at some time in the future, especially with me right here on these shows. If I say anything, you guys are going to hold me accountable for it. And I know that. It's part of the reason I don't drink, because I know that if I was drunk, I would probably do and say things that I would regret later. Now, I believe fully that this woman probably regrets the way she acted. She speaks crudely. She makes reference to her genitals. And during the course of that, James and his friend also say something about their genitals. To me, this appears to be a couple of adults who are hanging out at a bar, and James and his friend are humoring a woman who is very, very drunk and making a fool of herself. If you are a person who drinks or you have drunk in the past, then you're probably aware of a situation very much like this. Whether it's a man or a woman, way too drunk, probably shouldn't be in the bar, and they're up in your face, they're talking to you, and they won't leave you alone, and you humor them. And that's the extent of this interaction. Now, Tracy Beans also appears to not be very happy with James as well. It's a 14 and a half minute video. She says, I watched this entire video. It made me sick to my stomach. Whatever the argument is, if you watch this and think that it's okay, we aren't on the same wavelength. This is disgusting. Watch it. So I encourage everybody to watch it. Am I saying that James and his friend and this woman have done something that, is totally okay? No, absolutely not. But I don't think it's a cancelable offense. And I feel that the impression that they're trying to get across is that James O'Keefe is somehow a creeper. But it's very clear when you watch this video that this super drunk girl
is all over James O'Keefe talking to him, and he's really tolerating her presence. So I just wanted to put that out there because somebody had contacted me the other day to say that Kyle Serafin had said that Jake Lang is not a good guy, that Jake Lang is somehow a grifter or something like that. Kyle has every right to have that opinion. However, I don't agree with him, and I don't really know what his opinion is based on, because as far as I know, he hasn't really given any sort of background to that. And I also don't agree with Tracy Beans that, you know, this is something that we need to be up in arms about. Again, this is a moment that was, you know, perhaps inappropriate to capture on video. And certainly this woman's behavior was inappropriate, but putting it into the context of a group of people who are at a wedding, who got super drunk and who are hanging out with other drunk people, it's really not a big shocker. So anyways, I just wanted to get that out of the way. I'm going to go ahead and share the link with you right now. And I'm also going to play just a selected portion of this video because I want you to see. They put the worst part at the very beginning where James O'Keefe mentions his genitals. Now, they leave out the part. They leave it out of the context of the girl describing her genitals. She starts the conversation about sexual things. Here is the here is the link. I'm sharing this over on all the platforms. You guys can check it out. Let's go ahead and take a look at this. I'm going to skip past the initial portion because I feel it's kind of disingenuous to start this video by putting the worst part in there. I mean, obviously, the insinuation is like, ooh, this is what you're supposed to see. And why would they try to take James O'Keefe down? I don't know. James O'Keefe has done a lot to expose a lot of bad actors. This seems like another carefully targeted attack. I'm not saying Kyle or Tracy are behind it, but, well, somebody is, and they're the ones sharing it. So let's take a look.
A wedding.
It was a wedding.
I'm sorry. But that is a lie to me.
It's not a lie.
I've heard seven guys.
First of all, look at his body language. Look at her body language. She is like all up on him. She's leaning into him. He is standing upright, okay? He's not grabbing her. He's not taking advantage of her. He's not trying to fondle her or anything like that. She is all over him.
Don't you think I'm a nice guy?
Look at that. She's grabbing his hand. Grabbing his hand. And she's begging him for more alcohol. All right. It's not like James O'Keefe is holding a bottle of tequila and pouring it down her throat.
What do you want? What do you want to drink?
All right. We're going to leave it there because I feel that the very first opening tells you everything you need to know about what truly happened in this interaction. And I feel like if anybody is trying to make it out to be something else, it's intellectually dishonest. And it's also completely unfair for people to act like that. Yet, let he who has never sinned cast the first stone. Now, if James O'Keefe was out sending nudes to teenage girls, oh, man, you know, I'd expose the shit out of it. Of course. Of course. It's an inappropriate behavior. But that's not what's happening here. All right, we are going to now head on over to our interview with Anthony Sabatini, the lawyer for Jake Lang. Let me just make this full screen here, and we'll bring Anthony on in. Enter full screen, and there we go. Okay, coming in now is lawyer Anthony Sabatini. Yes, thank you very much for being here, guys. Anthony, you are live on the air. Can you hear me, sir?
Yes, sir. Loud and clear. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you very much for joining us. This is our first time meeting. I'm Zach Payne. You're on my program, Red Pill News. Anthony Sabatini, you are an attorney. You're representing January 6th defendant Jake Lang, and you are here in lieu of him today. So I want to say thank you very much for coming on such short notice.
Anytime. Thanks for your focus on this issue.
Absolutely. You don't know this because we've never spoken, but I was in D.C. on January 6th. I was there to cover the event. And obviously, like many people, no one was there to riot. No one was there to take over the Capitol. I'm sure you're well aware because you're knee deep in it. This has become sort of a cultural touchstone. Either you believe that half the country was trying to destroy democracy, or you believe that your country was being taken over by an authoritarian force led by bad elements within the federal government. That's truly what I believe happened. Anthony, what was your connection to January 6th, if you had any?
Sure. Well, I agree with you. I believe the latter. On January 6th, I was doing the recount in Georgia for the Senate runoff. So actually, I was down there with the National Republican Party doing the runoff, potential recount for the Brian Kemp Senate race. Had I not been there volunteering my time with the Republican National Lawyers Association, I would have been in January 6th also. And so at first, when these cases started, I was trying to refer to them to local counsel in D.C., but then realized that there really weren't any conservative fighting attorneys that were willing to take these cases, or maybe just a small handful.
Right.
And so I decided to start taking them my own. So I have actually 9 separate January 6th cases that I've taken over the last 2 years, and Jake's just one of them. And obviously his is probably the most significant in terms of media attention, because he's become one of the great spokespeople for the plight of January 6th protesters, and is sort of the model of how unfairly they've been treated. And certainly, so, you know, that's why they're coming after him.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. So I was just telling the audience before you got here, spoke with Jake yesterday. He spent 20 days in the hole, 20 days in solitary confinement. He was out for, what, less than 24 hours, and they threw him in again. Are you aware of why they put him back in solitary?
So they're claiming, they use a lot of pretext excuses. So they have these administrative complaints against him. For example, they'll say things like, oh, well, by communicating with the public and telling people to protest at the jail and to speak against the conditions of both himself and other J6ers, you know, not just that jail, but others, he's distracting or creating a dangerous environment, because, you know, he's making it that people are act in a hostile manner towards people who work in the prison system. So it's totally made up. There's no factual evidence to back that up. But that is sort of the blanket assertions they make. And since they're both the jury and the judge when it comes to administrative complaints against people who are already in the jail, the people who administer the jail are the ones who literally commence the complaints and then punish you within it. Obviously, they're going to be successful. They also used another really lame and completely insane administrative complaint. They said that the mattress inside of this room that is already in terrible condition — obviously, this is a federal prison mattress, it's a, you know, metal springs and whatnot — that it was damaged in some way, that the springs weren't, you know, functioning as well as they were previously. So they just sort of come up with these really inane, innocuous, silly accusations, and they get to interpret them as valid. But the real reason why he's obviously being punished and singled out is his First Amendment rights. He's the most prolific communicator about January 6th issues out of all 1,300 people who've been charged with January 6th. I think it's almost 1,400 now. And so that's why he has a target on his back. And he's in the worst prison system, by the way, individual prison in the entire prison system. He's in what they call MDC, the Metropolitan Detention Complex. It's in Western Brooklyn, on the river between Brooklyn and Manhattan. And it's awful, the worst. Actually, 3 judges in the last 3 years have said, we're not even going to allow the defendant in whatever case they had to go there, because it's the worst kind of punishment. And they don't believe that even somebody who's guilty of a crime should go there because it's so incompetent. I'll give you another example how bad it is.
Please.
A month ago, we had a bond hearing set to renew the bond schedule in this case, to have a judge decide whether to allow him out to be free, in preparation for his trial, which is later this year. And It was a hearing via Zoom. So you had the judge, you had the DOJ, you had us as the defense attorneys, and the prison just was so incompetent. They're like, yeah, we don't have like the people here to set this up, and so we're just going to have to cancel this. I mean, literally, it does not even function as a prison. It's so decrepit and just badly run. They literally were under a court order to produce Jake for this hearing, and they couldn't even do it. So
Wow. It's
a really messed up system. The process is the punishment. They know that, and they don't really care. It's evil. And this is what Congress really should be focused on, is trying to like create a functioning prison system. But of course, you know, they're more interested in the Green New Deal and all these other things. So it's just not going to fix itself anytime soon.
Yeah, it's definitely frustrating, Anthony. I mean, you take a look around at how much is just broken in America at this point. I mean, obviously the prison system, the southern border. I mean, pretty much every previously functioning institution in the United States of America is now a broken, shattered, and former remnant of itself. And meanwhile, not only are they worried about electric cars and the Green New Deal, they're worried about shipping off hundreds of billions of dollars to foreign lands to fund God knows what war today and God knows what war tomorrow. Super, super offensive to a lot of the viewers. I think Mitch McConnell was just on television speaking about the $60 billion more going to Ukraine. And he said, well, it's not that much money. You know, I mean, it could have taken care of a lot of problems that we have here in America right now. So do you think that Jake's upcoming trial is in danger of perhaps not taking place as scheduled as a result of the current situation he's in?
I think there's a chance. I don't know if it's likely that the judge would grant a continuance based on these things. I think there's a chance that maybe bolsters the argument that he should be released in the meantime. But in terms of actually changing the date of the sentencing, I don't think that's going to happen. Obviously, he's the January 6th defendant who's been held the longest. He got arrested shortly after January 6th. Right. And of course, that was 3 years and 3 months ago. And so had he not had a 1512 obstruction charge, which everything got paused because of the Supreme Court kicking that up. That's one of the, you know, most grossly prosecuted and, you know, malevolently used statutes. It was a white collar crime statute that was created shortly after Enron in 2002 or 2001 that they're now using for people who protest, obviously just conservatives. But long story short, had that not happened, his trial probably would have happened already. So yeah, this has been going on for a long time, and I don't think that the judge is likely to grant a continuance again in the case.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about that Fisher case upcoming before the Supreme Court. You know, what can you tell us about it? How likely is it that the Supreme Court might actually consider this and then get rid of these charges for all of these defendants?
I think most legal commentators agree almost unanimously. The oral hearings, the oral argument was Tuesday of last week. And I think most people who are familiar with the tone and the questions of the justices believe it's either going to be a 5-4 or 6-3 decision, basically disabusing the DOJ of its use of the statute. Because it was obvious if you read it is an ambiguously worded statute, but they stretched out its meaning just as a way of punishing January 6th defense. I also think they knew that eventually the Supreme Court would knock it down, but they would have created so much, pain and punishment in the meantime that the point would have gotten across, right? And this is, of course, how the Democrats operate. They don't care, you know, if they had the power to do something. They use all the power that they've been given and, you know, half of the powers they don't have in order to try to further their political ends. It's the weak Republicans that are always afraid to, you know, stretch the boundaries. So, yeah, they probably knew. And it is going to be struck down. I think all the 1512 charges are going to be removed. All those people are going to be resentenced. The next obstacle we're going to have, and by the way, that's a positive note, but it just goes to show you that you know, how evil these people are. The first thing that happened once those oral arguments occurred last week were the district judges kind of weighing in and hearings they're having in real time, like sort of district hearings that were occurring in time since the Supreme Court hearing, were already saying, well, if they strike it down, what we'll do is during sentencing, we'll look at that bad behavior of trying to obstruct justice. We won't formally hit them, use that statute to punish them, but we'll just use the negativity, you know, in their eyes, of what they did, to basically punish them in a more harsh way. So they're just saying, even if you're not guilty of 1512 and we're not allowed to use 1512, we'll just use the fact that we think that you're guilty of 1512 and that we want to punish you in 1512, as part of your sentencing. So whether you're guilty or not, you're going to get more time in prison because judges have the ability, the legal authority to depart upward from your mandatory minimum sentence. They can go over what DOJ asked for. And a lot of these judges have done that in order to try to, you know, gain cred with the DOJ and leftist groups. It's awful, but that's what's happening.
So is this what the DOJ was referring to when just recently, just before the oral arguments were heard, they had mentioned that, you know, if this is struck down, we're going to do something else that's going to be just as bad, essentially. I mean, Jack Smith had kind of telegraphed
judges,
that.
Yeah. Correct. Yes. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt. But yeah, several of the individual judges have already indicated that. Both Democrat and Republican appointed judges. You know, if they strike this down with a 3 sentence, don't worry. We'll still hit them really hard on the attempt to obstruct Congress, which once again, it's unlawful. I think that'll go to the Supreme Court too. If they try to do that, somebody will appeal the sentencing and then they'll win. But once again, they just, they get what they want in the meantime because they know that, you know, there's no real remedy here other than after these people have served prison time that you get a letter from DOJ saying, okay, you know, like, you know, you're, you shouldn't have served that much, but you'll get your life back. I mean, it's just the way they are.
No, no, it's a real travesty. All right. Well, Anthony, I know that you, you have to take off, but before you go, are you going to be having anything to do with, the election coming up in 2024? I understand the RNC is, training a lot of lawyers to make sure they're going to be on hand, ready to challenge ballots, ready to stop Democrats from stealing it again. Or are you going to be solely focused on January 6th efforts?
I'll obviously try to do both. I mean, I'm passionate about this stuff. It's both my career, but it's also my hobby, you know? So when it comes down to it, if I have extra time, I will help with one of the swing states being a lawyer there. Florida is not going to be in play. This is no longer a purple state. So I'm not interested in what's going on here, really. I'll probably be in either Georgia, or Arizona, in a volunteer effort, probably Georgia, to do volunteerism and to do affidavits and just be a poll watcher, whatever it is that they think they need. I mean, I saw a headline the other day saying the RNC is going to try to have something like 10,000 lawyers in the field for early voting and voting day. So yeah, I'll be definitely engaged in that for sure.
All right, good. I'm glad to hear it. I mean, we have a we have a lack of conservative attorneys that are willing to do both of those activities. And so I commend you on both efforts. And thank you so much for being here. I'd love to have you back in the future for a full 2-hour show, if that'd be okay.
Sure, anytime. Call anytime. We'll set that up. Love to. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Anthony. We'll talk to you soon.
God bless.
God bless. All right. Thank you again to Anthony Sabatini for joining us. That was great. Definitely looking forward to having him back in the future. Thank you again also, Anthony, for the clarification on exactly what's happening with Jake's case and, of course, the Supreme Court case, the Fisher case that certainly they're probably going to be bringing a verdict on here very shortly. We'll talk more about that in a moment when we get to President Trump's presidential immunity case. And, you know, just to give you a spoiler, I had seen somebody in the chat earlier say, you know, do we really want presidents with immunity? Let's be honest. We've had presidential immunity for 234 years. This is the first time in history that anybody has even thought of charging a former president. Up until this point, I remember when George W. Bush was in office. I remember when Obama was in office. We directly, activists out here in the real world, we thought and we spoke about whether or not a president could be convicted of this or that, or whether they could be, brought up on charges for things that they did while they were in office. I mean, think about George W. Bush. Think about Colin Powell. Think about Dick Cheney lying to us about 9/11, lying to us about so many things, weapons of mass destruction. They didn't exist. And yet we went into Iraq, we destroyed Afghanistan, we blew up historic sites, we killed millions of people, and for what? It was a generational war within the Bush family. Poppy Bush, George H.W. Bush, was upset about what happened in the first Gulf War, and so he sent his son in there to finish the job. Afghanistan, they didn't have anything to do with 9/11. They knew exactly where bin Laden was, and there was no need for them to go in there and do what they did. Same thing with Iraq. Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11. Yes, you guys know this. I don't need to tell you anything about it. But when it comes to Obama ordering drone strikes on American citizens, I'm sure you heard in the Supreme Court oral arguments the other day, we spoke about this just yesterday, the lawyers for the DOJ said, oh, well, Obama asked the lawyers first, and the lawyers said it was okay, so it's okay. I'm hoping that President Trump's attorneys are going to say, well, President Trump asked Bill Barr. Bill Barr said everything was okay, and so therefore everything is okay. All right, well, let us get into a story that I had wanted to speak about yesterday, but I had not yet. Let's see. Warrior Mima, holy shit, are you serious? $50,000 a month? Wow, I guess I'm doing it wrong. That's insane. That's absolutely insane. How does that work? Wow. Wow. That's so funny. Oh, my God. Oh, well, anyways, glad you're here. Thank you for telling us. Oh my gosh. Hold on. Let me get this pulled up here. All right. Let's see. So the other day, Alec Baldwin was in a coffee shop. Alec Baldwin was in a coffee shop and he was getting coffee. And that crazy black woman who wears white face and a blonde wig and hangs out in New York, I think that Kick Dreaming called her the Hamas whore. She calls herself Crackhead Barney. She pretty much like accosted Alex Baldwin in this coffee shop, and we're just gonna watch the video. Alec Baldwin's reaction is so funny. It's so funny.
Alec, can you please save me Palestine one time? Why did you kill that lady? You killed that lady and got no jail time? No jail time, Alec? No jail time, Alec. You're putting innocent people in jail, Alec Baldwin.
I'm sorry.
Free Palestine, Alec, just one time, and I'll leave you alone. I'll leave you alone, I swear. Just say free Palestine one time. One time. One time.
Call the police.
One time, Alec. You know he's a criminal. You know he's a fucking criminal. Come on, Alec, just say free Palestine one time. One time, just one time, please, and I'll leave you alone. Free Palestine. Fuck Israel. Fuck Zionism. Please say it.
Oh, look at him. Look at him. He's going to lose it. He's going to lose it. He lost it. Absolutely lost it. Serter, you're making my point for me. I'm talking about criminal prosecution. Yes, impeachment is the route to hold presidents accountable. I didn't think I needed to say it because, I mean, we've already talked about it before. If they get impeached, they can be tried, I believe. Well, they have to be impeached for something, and then they have to be found guilty. Okay, for them to leave office and for they to no longer be able to be impeached and for the Department of Justice to go after them for something that is not a crime, well, obviously, you know, that's totally, that's my point. That's what I'm talking about. So anyways, the question that I'm referring to with regard to presidential immunity is the president, having the authority to commit acts in light of the national security that could potentially otherwise be considered illegal. Let's take as an example the assassination of a rival, because that was definitely something that was floated. Let's say that somebody is running for president, but they're also like a terrorist, right? Like they're setting off bombs around the country and they're saying, vote for me or I'm going to kill your kids. If the president sends a missile into their home and assassinates them, you know, I mean, you know, all's fair in love and war, right? No, it's still murder. Okay. I mean, like, you know, there was no trial, but it is in the interest of national security. Anyways, we're on the same page, but okay, clearly. So this is Crackhead Barney, guys. If you didn't know who Crackhead Barney was, this is her. Piers Morgan then had her on his program and it went haywire. It did not end well for Piers Morgan. You can see already she's got her shirt pulled up over her boobs. She's got tape on them. She's an absolute nutcase and she's wearing all of these first aid pieces and she's saying that Alec Baldwin did it to her. I mean, he might have. I don't know. The video cut off. Let's watch.
Piers fucking Morgan! You're asking too
just for
many
the record,
questions.
My name is actually just
What's
Piers Morgan.
What's wrong with saying free Palestine? Piers, can you say free Palestine for me?
I think.
Piers, can you say free Palestine for
if
me?
If you stop shouting, yeah.
I want you to say it.
Yes, I'm happy
okay.
to say.
Okay, yeah. I'm not going to shout.
If you just,
Mr. Piers Morgan,
if you just keep quiet, I can answer your question. Yes, I'm very happy to
I'm
say
I'm never
that,
quiet, Piers.
Sorry, you're still talking.
I'm never quiet.
Okay, but try.
I'm never
otherwise,
quiet,
I can't.
Piers. I can't.
Who is his producer? Like, who would put her on air? Yes, Piers Morgan is a moron. He is one of the stupidest talking heads out there. And he's constantly opening his mouth and talking about American politics and American policies when he's got no business doing so. Piers Morgan is a clown, 100%. But who in their right mind would put this piece of work on television? Oh my God. It just goes to show you the state that we're in here in America. Now I'm going to take you from one extreme to the next. This is going to make, I think, most of the audience really happy. I mean, my face lit up when I saw this story come across the wire. So this guy on screen right here, he's a child rapist. He's one of the most despicable types of people that you're going to find anywhere in the world. All right? You guys know how we feel about child rapists. Well, apparently there's a judge in Louisiana who feels exactly the same way. He just sentenced this guy to be physically castrated after he pled guilty to raping a 14-year-old girl. And I'm going to say that again because I want it to sink in. This judge essentially sentenced this guy to never rape another child again. This man will not be using his genitals after this sentence has been put into action. This is according to District Attorney Scott Perillo, and it happened back on April 17th, but Glenn Sullivan is that greasy-looking dirtbag on screen. He's 54 years old. He pled guilty to raping this 14-year-old child, four counts of second-degree rape. And so on Monday, Louisiana Judge William Dykes, who is ultra-based, I'd love to get a T-shirt with this guy's face on it, sentenced Sullivan to be physically castrated along with serving a 50-year prison sentence. So the guy's going to die in prison. He essentially gave him life in prison, and he took his balls. Took his balls and put him in prison for the rest of his life. Assistant District Attorney Brad Casico told the press, I've had three people ordered to be chemically castrated, but to my knowledge, this is the first physical castration to be ordered. Back in 2008, Louisiana, it's a special kind of place. They enacted a law that ordered men convicted of certain types of rape crimes to be castrated chemically or to have the option of being physically castrated. Sounds like Glenn wasn't given the option. He was just told that this is what's going to happen. So Glenn pleads guilty to raping this young teenager multiple times. He got her pregnant, now he's been sentenced to die in prison and have his balls cut off. It's quite the sentence, if I must say. Now the lead prosecutor in the case said, I intend on using every tool to the legislature was willing to give us, including physical castration, to seek justice for the children in our community. Well, good on you, District Attorney Casico. Gotta love it. Jim Kyle says, is that called bottom surgery? I think technically it's, hold on, I actually know, there is a term for it, a scientific term. Orchiotomy, that's it. I'm pretty sure that's what it is. Maybe you don't want to search it, but I'm pretty sure it's called an orchiotomy when someone is snipped, when they have their balls removed. Anyways, I'm so happy for the people of Louisiana. I feel terrible for this little girl, obviously, but I'm glad this guy's going to be off the street, and I'm glad that, you know, even if he gets out, he's never going to be able to rape again. Good for him. Lonely German says, use a dull knife. Texas Tom says, castration won't do anything. I used to castrate my horses, and they still tried screwing around. Well, they're also animals, and I don't know that the horses psychologically realize that they no longer have balls. On top of the fact that once his testicles are removed, he is no longer going to be producing testosterone. His sex drive is definitely going to go down. I mean, either way, if you don't think it's going to work, then, you know, that's fine. However, I feel like it's poetic justice, and I feel like it's totally in line with the crimes. Now, speaking of perverts, look at this. This guy on national television, he you can see he's like standing here with a young boy, and he bites his ear on television. This is on at the World Snooker Championship. Now, snooker is a British sport. It's kind of like pool. I mean, it's got balls on a table. It's a smaller table, and I think it might have smaller sticks or anything. But anyways, South Yorkshire police are reviewing the footage because it was brought to their attention because, I mean, it was streamed live on national TV. Who is this man? Who is this young boy? I mean, I'm sure they're not father and son, or at least I hope they're not father and son. But at the time, Stephen Hendry, that's this guy right here, he's a seven-time world champion in the sport of snooker. He was speaking during a break in the afternoon session, and TV camera caught this guy biting his ear. We don't know who they are together. We don't know what their relationship is. But he appeared to rub his beard and whisper something to the child before disturbingly biting his ear. Now, this is the most disturbing part. The child seemed unfazed And then he waved at the camera after realizing they were being filmed. Snooker is like pinball pool. Okay, yes. And so, anyways, it's like he's just like, oh, hi, an adult man is biting my ear, totally normal. Now, obviously, people are suggesting that this might be, you know, forced, some kind of defense mechanism. I tend to agree with that. I mean, I wasn't in the habit of having grown men bite my ears, no matter, you know, who they were. But now his face is all over the place. I hope they find who this kid is, and I hope that, you know, they can help him if he's being abused or something like that. But anyways, I thought that it went perfectly with the last story. Now, speaking of pedophiles, Joe Biden has just granted clemencies to 16 criminals. Kind of interesting, considering that Joe Biden is only in his first term as president. Presidents generally wait until, you know, their second term, when they're almost done, they've got 8 years behind them, before they start granting clemency or giving people pardons and such as that. But strangely enough, Joe Biden, he's still not done with his first term, and he's granting clemency to 16 criminals. So let's see, who are they? Most of them had been granted pardons because they were convicted of drug offenses like distribution of cocaine. Maybe they're friends of hunters, or they might have had possession of hard drugs. You might notice a theme here. So here's the full list. Lachey Nicole Rotan of Bristol, Tennessee. She had conspiracy to possess with the intent to distribute 280 grams or more of cocaine base. That would be crack cocaine and 5 kilograms of cocaine. Margaret Ann Van Dyke of Ellenville, New York. She had conspiracy to possess with intent to distribute a controlled substance, also crack cocaine. Look at this. Isn't that interesting? Remember Joe Biden and the crime bill with Bill Clinton? I mean, it's arguable that these people wouldn't have been in such long prison sentences if it weren't for the fact that Joe Biden urged Congress to pass that criminal legislation, which would overly penalize people for having crack cocaine. Also, Jason Hernandez, let's see, also crack cocaine, intent to distribute. Oh, but he also had methamphetamine and cocaine hydrochloride. I think that's like a liquid cocaine. He was within 1,000 feet of a school. Jeffrey Allen Lewis, he used a communication facility to facilitate a felony. Maybe like a radio tower or something? Not sure. Beverly Denise Holsey of Palatka, Florida. She was also a crack cocaine distributor. Let's see. Jesse Mosley, conspiracy to distribute cocaine. Bobby Darrell Lowry, possession of cocaine base, also crack cocaine. Katrina Polk, conspiracy to distribute crack cocaine. Every single one of these people was only in prison because of what Joe Biden did with that crime bill. So, obviously, this is Joe Biden trying to give himself a little bit of breathing room, because people love playing that clip. Love have him hold, you see this little piece of crack cocaine holding it up in front of Congress. And then, of course, now you've got all the videos of his son smoking crack cocaine, doing powder cocaine, doing God knows what else. But, you know, the list goes on and it keeps doing the same thing. It's more and more cases of people selling, possessing, or distributing crack cocaine. So Joe Biden is trying to give himself a little bit of breathing room and perhaps try to lock down just a couple of more votes before we come up to November. Yes, he's trying to secure the crackhead vote. Oh, Joe. Well, you know, joke's on him, because the crackheads aren't going to vote. Even if you give them crack, they're probably not going to make it to the polls. They're going to be too busy smoking crack in somebody's basement somewhere. All right. So, Katie Hobbs has hit a new record. She has vetoed more bills in a shorter time than anybody else that I am personally aware of. And she just vetoed a brand new bill. This is a bill that would have kept your daughters safe if you live in Arizona and they attend public schools. You see, this bill would have stopped biological males from taking showers, naked showers with biological girls in public schools. I can remember being a young man going to high school. When we had to do the swimming section of our PE class, I dreaded it. Because I didn't even want to get naked in front of the boys at school. Who wants to get naked in front of other people unless, like, it's somebody you really want to get naked in front of? But anyways, can you imagine being a young girl in today's America, walking into the shower room after you jump in the pool, you get back out, you've done a couple of laps, you come in, and there is a biological male standing in the middle of the shower room doing God knows what. It's not appropriate, okay? It's completely inappropriate. But Katie Hobbs, she believes that she stands on this rock. She's got the moral high ground. She says, I will not sign legislation that attacks Arizonans. Well, Katie Hobbs, by virtue of the fact that you have vetoed this bill, you are hurting Arizonans. I guess, you know, it's so funny how this, the roles have been reversed. You know, because for years it was like, you know, oh, women, we gotta do all this stuff for women. But now it's like, oh, we gotta do all this stuff for trans women. F the real women. We gotta do stuff for the trans women. So Katie Hobbs vetoed yet another bill that would have defined sex as a person's immutable biological sex as determined by anatomy, physiology, genetics, and hormones existing at the time of that person's birth. And it would have protected the shower rooms in K through 12 schools. Now, it was SB 1182, the Arizona Accommodations for All Children's Act, and it would have required public schools in Arizona to provide a single occupancy or an employee shower room to students who are unwilling or unable to use the shared shower that corresponds to their sex. It's a totally logical thing to do. We've been saying for years, if you're going to have like boys and girls participating in things together, if you're going to have people who are biological male identifying as female or biological female identifying as male, you know, give them a separate space. Okay. If you really want it that bad, like have a biological male room, have a biological female room, and have a mixed use room for the kids who are all over the place. Now, Liberty High School in Peoria, Arizona had initially come under fire because they allowed a male student to use the girls' locker room and then, of course, shower alongside the girls. Now, you might guess what could have happened. I mean, if I was 14 years old, showering with naked girls, I mean, come on, you know, this is what happens. He had been reprimanded several times, not only for, you know, acting inappropriately, he was loitering around in the girls' bathrooms. You know, it wasn't like he was just going in and doing his business. He was going in there and hanging out and waiting so that he could get an eyeful because, you know, it's like, oh, I'm a girl. But he was just using it as an excuse to be around naked girls. Like, that's, you know, this is why we have to do something about it. So it would have ensured that there would have been a safe bathroom type space that would have allowed for a private use facility so that people who are confused about who they are or have changed their mind about what they are identifying as, there would have been a place for them to go. And it also would have accommodated individuals who would just not want to use the other spaces because they don't feel comfortable in those spaces. I mean, not everybody who is going to be identifying as trans is going to have this fascination with taking advantage of the other sex, or trying to do something inappropriate. I mean, there is a continuum of stuff happening here. That's one of the reasons why it's so difficult to address, but this bill would have addressed it in a fairly succinct way. So, Katie Hobbs said, as I have said time and time again, I will not sign legislation that attacks Arizonans. Now, she vetoed a couple of other bills, Senate Bill 1040, that would have required Arizona public schools to provide a reasonable accommodation to a person who is unwilling or unable to use specified facilities designated for their sex in public school buildings or multiple occupancy sleeping quarters while attending a public school sponsored activity. We've seen what happens when people are allowed to use facilities at, you know, their own discretion. I mean, Loudoun County, Virginia, anyone? I mean, that kid raped multiple girls, all right? If it wasn't for what the school had done covering everything up, those rapes never would have happened. So anyways, Katie Hobbs, once again, stumping to ensure that boys and girls will be naked in front of each other in high school. Totally inappropriate. Don't like it. So, on the subject of this sorts of behavior. Rachel Levine, the quarterback, former quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs, Rachel Levine, now working in the Biden regime. You know her, him, as the guy that you simply don't know how to address, because, he's big, he's broad, but he's wearing a skirt. So apparently some secret transcripts or writings from Rachel Levine have come to light. And it sounds like the deputies that are working for Joe Biden on these specific issues, are using various disciplines of science to promote transgenderism. And that is including like small children from K through 12 children. And these documents that we're talking about were posted by Stephen Miller's America First Legal. He says anti-science political radicals have declared war on science. Now, what they show is that the deputies working for Biden, which are principally transgender appointee Rachel Levine, are trying to identify and promote a myriad new identity groups so that they can be mobilized for the Democratic Party's diverse coalition of minorities. Assistant Secretary Levine's radical transgender ideology is currently being implemented across the nation's health apparatus. The Biden admin is working every day to destroy fundamental truth, which is biological sex, and force the American people to adopt their radical gender ideology. Now, it should concern everyone that government officials who are charged with preventing pandemics, curing diseases, and providing health advice to the entire United States are occupied with redefining sex into a quote multi-dimensional construct. This is funny because they didn't do any of those other things particularly well before they started focusing on this. Half of me thinks that they just went laser focused on transgenderism because they got caught like not doing any of that stuff before, lying to the American people, like causing plandemics, essentially making people sick, beginning cancer outbreaks, that sort of thing. So Rachel Levine's recognition of many small identity groups is intended to justify a diversion of political power from mainstream heterosexuals and from the well-recognized gay and lesbian minorities. So the beneficiaries of Rachel's imposed diversity process would be the progressive government officials. That includes people like her, the people who want to manage the civic chaos as young men and women lose their social, political, and economic power to form loving families. Better measurements of sex, gender identity, and gender sexual orientation will improve the ability to identify gender and sexual and gender minority populations and understand the challenges they face. The documents have been released after the UK's government released the Blue Ribbon Cass report into the science of transgenderism. Now, this report had exposed many of the medical and civic harms that the campaign had created in the past by normalizing the claim that each person's sense of gender is more important than the real and important differences between men and women. Now, people are born either a boy or a girl, and there is a very small minority of people who are perhaps intersexed at birth. But the vast majority of people are one or the other. And when you start talking to kids about these things, before their identity has been self-actualized, it can be profoundly harmful to them. And it's not only profoundly harmful to them as individuals, it's profoundly harmful to society at large. The American birth rate is the lowest it's been in, I don't know, a century right now. I mean, it's very low. It's also very low around the world. And it should be, you know, no surprise because we have had an explosion in people identifying as transgender, even people identifying, as gay and lesbian. So that whole LGBTQ plus rainbow spectrum that's out there has kind of taken over the ideology of the government and so many other private businesses and groups. Jim Kyle says, makes sense because this trans crap was really promoted under Obama. Go figure. Yeah, they really got started at that time. Mm. Then they just ramped it up in the last couple of years. So anyways, the Cass report took the mask off. When you're pushing gender-affirming care on children, it is a really, really bad situation. Things can go terribly, terribly wrong. Now, Joe Biden and Rachel Levine, I mean, they're looking to appeal to these very niche groups all around America. And even among them, they're not going to be successful because, you know, you don't have to be transgender and be crazy. You know, it just so happens that the people that they push the most happen to be both. There are plenty of people out there who are transgender and you never hear from them. Okay. They don't want to get out there and put their faces everywhere and be involved in this stuff. Same with, you know, people who are gay. Most people just want to live their lives and, they just want to thrive. Now, as a result of, how the Biden regime has, just destroyed society so precipitously, we have many, many people who have turned away from that and they see the radical leftist ideology of people like Rachel Levine and of course people like Joe Biden, and they reject it because they recognize that detrimental effect on society. Serter says, are they doing theoretical physics with someone's mental illness? This sounds like some serious MK Ultra tactics being exposed here. And then Andy Pearson says, I thank God our birth rate is low. It limits the crazies. Well, Andy, when the birth rate's low, that means that we are not having babies either. That's a significant problem for the future of humanity. And it's also a problem because it means that we're not going to be here to replace ourselves when we die. There are a lot of crazies who are choosing not to have babies, but frankly, a lot of conservatives are also choosing to not have babies as well. Now, for what reason? I mean, I've already done my part. Lisa's already done her part. I'm done with that phase of my life. But for the people who are younger, they're coming up. I mean, they are disenfranchised. They see life in America. They believe that perhaps the American dream is dead. They find it very difficult to get a job that takes care of all their bills, move out. Even to start a family is something that is very, very difficult to do now. As a result of that, people choose not to have babies. I think, honestly, it is the responsibility of God-fearing Americans to have as many babies as they possibly can handle. Because if we're not here to replace the gene pool, then somebody else is going to do that replacing for us. And we're seeing that happen right now in the form of illegal immigration coming across the border 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Andy, he's a good one. He says, I did my part. 6 kids, 15 grandkids. Good on you, son. Good on you. Number one Indiana dad says, new EO. Is this a new executive order? Shit. Hang on. Thank you, number one Indiana dad. Let's go ahead and take a look at that real quick before we talk about the other stories on Joe Biden. He does care about women. What do you bet? What do you want to bet this is going to have something to do with abortion? Biden signs executive order aimed at advancing the study of women's health. Is it women? Is he talking about women?
You sure about that? You sure about that? You sure about that?
So, President Joe Biden signed an executive order on Monday that is aimed at facilitating improved studies on women's health. Women's health, whenever they use that, it's code for abortion. Let's see if I'm right. Partly improved data collection aimed at providing enhanced opportunities for biomedical research through easier access to funding. Not real comfortable with biomedical research. Studies and medical research were previously conducted mostly on men, but a change in legislation implemented in the 90s brought out more funding for medical. I guess I don't know why they wouldn't do medical research on both men and women. Many modern research fails to adequately address the differences between men's. Well, I suppose actually this is a good thing because Joe Biden is at least admitting that there is a difference between men and women. We still know too little about how to effectively prevent, diagnose, and treat a wide array of health conditions in women. The executive order also provides fertile ground for the president's reelection campaign. Of course it does. Specifically because women comprise most of the president's voter demographic. Single, lonely, Democratic cat women voting for Joe Biden. Pussy hat wearing. Let's see. Specifically because women comprise most of that voter block, effectively having accounted for more than half of his voter coalition in the 2020 election. Efforts to organize and mobilize female voters. Joe, okay. Let me see. Of course, now it comes to abortion, stricter abortion laws, procedures relating to pregnancies like IVF. Okay. I guess I don't know why he needed to do this as an executive order. Well, I mean, obviously he wants something that he can point to say, I did that instead of sending it to Congress. All right. So I showed you one crazy interview with crackhead Barney. Here's another one. Joe Biden did a live interview with Howard Stern. I hate Howard Stern. Be real honest with you. I don't care for the man at all. He's a disgusting human being for so many different reasons. But in this interview, Joe Biden tells another whopper. If you'll remember, he had claimed not that long ago that, like, he was part of the civil rights movement. That's not true. Yeah, he definitely was not involved in the civil rights movement. And he, as far back as, I don't know, 1980, he was talking about having offense at sending his children to a racial jungle, meaning that his children might be attending schools with, you know, black and brown kids. Bubba V. Bird says they will study prostate cancer. I think you're right. Oh, God. I mean, I just the only thing that matters to me is at least Joe Biden admits that there is a difference between men and women. I just found out I've got female prostate cancer. Oh, God. All right. So Joe Biden on Friday called into the Howard Stern show. I guess nobody knew he was calling in. He just called in. Howard, I'm a big fan. okay. So, let me see. Do we have an audio clip here? Here we go. Joe Biden claiming that he was arrested while standing on the porch of a black family during the civil rights unit. I was arrested while white.
And I looked at my mom. I said, honey, you haven't said anything. She said, Joey, let me remember. True story. So remember when they were desegregating Linfield, the neighborhood with, 70 homes built at one suburbia. And I told you, and there was a black family moving in and there was people were down there protesting. I told you not to go down there and you went down. Remember that? And you came, got arrested by standing on the porch with a black family.
Right.
And they brought you back, the police. And I said, yeah, Mom, I remember that.
That never happened. That never happened. It's like, oh, anytime you hear Joe Biden say, true story, you know he's full of shit. You know he's about to lie to you. True story. I used to drive an 18-wheeler. No, you didn't, Joe. No, you didn't. You've never been inside an 18-wheeler. I've been inside an 18-wheeler. My God, the clutches on those things shifting. Whew, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. It's no wonder those guys got to go through 6 months of training. But I mean, anytime Joe Biden is like, you know, hey, true story, Jack, I'm about to tell you about something that happened in my life that I totally didn't make up. My uncle was eaten by cannibals. I haven't even talked about that one yet. Jeez, it's a bunch of whoppers from Joe Biden recently. So it was even more surprising. Serter says Biden isn't even aware of his own bowel movements. No, he's not. All he knows is that his butt's been wiped. That's all he knows. So Joe Biden has finally gone on the record and said that he is willing to debate Donald Trump. Now, previously, the mainstream media had been pressing him on this. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I cannot wait to see another debate between Joe Biden and Donald Trump because Donald Trump will mop the floor with him. All right. Yes, Donald Trump is older. Yes, but Joe Biden is even older. All right. And he was not in top form back in 2020, and he is much, much worse off here in 2024. He doesn't know whether he's coming or going, and he's going to get up there. He's going to stammer. They're probably going to have to shoot him up with a big hot shot of methamphetamine if they expect him to stay awake and even to keep his eyes open. Remember that speech that he gave where his eyes were like, like this? They were just like peeled open and he was talking in a hoarse whisper. He was so intense. That was one of the scariest moments. I remember Joe Biden's face popping up and I was like, holy shit, what did they give him? What is going on? Anyways, Joe Biden previously was pretty noncommittal. He didn't want to say, I'm going to debate Donald Trump. I think his whole team was saying, no, stop. Do not debate Donald Trump. You do not want to get on stage with that man again because he's going to tear you a new one. So I don't know if this was a mistake on his behalf. I don't know if he spoke out of turn as he so frequently does. But most people out there, nearly three quarters of the voters, believe that Biden is going to skip these presidential debates. And if he does, it's a sign of weakness. And I would have to agree with him. He is weak. So when he was on the Howard Stern show, Howard Stern asked him if he would debate Donald Trump, and he said, I am somewhere. I am happy to debate him, he said. Anywhere, anytime, any place. Now, he also threatened to punch Donald Trump in the face again over the weekend, as he has done so many times. I mean, like a typical radical left-wing moron, jumping to violence as the first means of defense. I mean, Donald Trump is going to come at you with his words. He's going to tear your throat out with his tongue. By speaking, not literally. But Joe Biden, well, he might actually have somebody knock you off, or he might just take you out behind the woodshed and punch you in the face or something like that. So he says this, I suggest Monday evening. He just goes through the days of the week. I suggest Monday evening, Tuesday evening, or Wednesday evening. Hold on just a second. Is this Donald Trump saying this? No, yes, this has got to be Donald Trump. Yes, this is Donald. Okay, so this is Donald Trump's full response to Joe Biden saying that he will debate him anytime. Crooked Joe Biden just announced that he's willing to debate. Everyone knows he doesn't really mean it. But in case he does, I say anywhere, anytime, any place, an old expression used by fighters. And obviously Joe Biden has threatened to fight him. I suggest Monday evening, Tuesday evening, or Wednesday evening at my Michigan rally, a state he is in the process of destroying with his electronic or his EV mandate. In the alternative, he's in New York City today, although he probably doesn't know it. And so am I. I'm stuck in one of the many court cases that he instigated as election interference against a political opponent, a continuing witch hunt. It's the only way he thinks he can win. In fact, let's do the debate at the courthouse tonight on national television. I'll wait around. Oh, my God, Donald Trump. I love him so much. Love him so much. Oh, God. Here's a bunch more whoppers from Joe Biden. Here we go. All right. Let's listen.
I learned a lot, and I made a lot of friends.
Did you ever save anyone's life when you were a lifeguard? Was anyone ever drowning?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah, well, half a dozen times, usually younger kids, you know. But
you do the thing with the whistle and then jump in with the bathing suit? And
you got it.
No kidding.
Yeah, it was a big pool. There were seven lifeguard stands.
Wow.
Let me tell you, there's this real son of a bitch named Corn Pop. He was a mean son of a bitch. Joe Biden saved six people from drowning. Why have we never heard that one before? I mean, at that pool, when he was talking about cockroaches jumping in his lap, that would have been the perfect time to bring it up, but he didn't. Okay, what else?
I got put in that 10 most eligible bachelor's list.
Because you were a United States senator, you were a catch. Yeah.
And so, and a lot of lovely women, but women would send very salacious pictures, and I'd just give them to the Secret Service. I thought somebody would think I was...
He's saying he's still got women sending him nudes? Remember, she was 12, I was 30, but that's a discussion for another day. Well, yeah, then he was also arrested when he was standing on that black family's porch, and he was a runner-up in state scoring in football. Anyways, spoiler alert, none of these things happened. None of these things happen. Joe Biden is a big, fat liar. And every time he opens his mouth, trust me, Jack, true story, Jack, about to tell you what something's happening, Jack. None of them. None of them happened. He has never done any of the things that he talks about. Well, you know what? The most famous Biden lie. This is my favorite one. Let's watch this. Okay. Joe Biden caught lying. Where is that original one? That's him lying in 1976. Here he is lying just 2 months ago. This is when he called that dude fat.
And I can get things done. That's why I'm running. And you want to check my shape on? Let's do push-ups together, man. Let's run. Let's do whatever you want to do. No one has said my son has done anything wrong, and I did not on any occasion, and no one has ever said it. Not one
thing you were doing anything wrong.
You said I set up my son to work in an oil company. Then you said, get your work straight, Jack.
but we hear on MSNBC.
You don't hear that on MSNBC. You did not hear that. But you heard.
They cut out the part where he said, listen, fat. That was my favorite. Ah, here it is. Joe Biden rode to the White House. Take a listen. Just a bunch of whoppers.
Question. What law school did you attend and where did you place in that class? And the other question could you quickly, I think I probably have
a much higher IQ than you do, I suspect.
That's a lie. Listen to this. Every single thing he says is a lie.
I went to law school on a full academic scholarship, the only one in my class that had.
That's a lie.
Full academic scholarship. In the first year in law school, I decided I didn't want to be in law school and ended up in the bottom two-thirds of my class, and then decided I wanted to stay, went back to law school, and in fact ended up in the top half of my class.
That's a lie.
International moot court competition.
That's a lie.
Is the outstanding student in the political science department at the end of my...
That's a lie. It doesn't exist.
I graduated with 3 degrees from...
That's a lie. He does not have 3 degrees.
Graduate school and 165 credits. Only needed 120.
No, he didn't. No, he didn't. He did not have that many credits.
3 credits. And I'd be delighted to sit down and compare my IQ to yours if you'd like, Frank.
I can say one thing.
He's such a pompous prick. Look at it. Look at that smug, satisfied look on his face. Just thinking, they'll never know. How would they know? How would they know? Well, guess what, Jack? It's the internet. It's called the freaking internet. Everything that you said was a lie. And he got called out. He had to drop out of the presidential race because of it. And America has such a short attention span. I don't know how many people know about that stuff. I mean, all the time I say this, I've mentioned it to people. And they're like, I never heard that. I didn't know Biden was such a big liar. What? Come on, Jack. Every time he opens his mouth. Anyways, done with that one. So, President Donald J. Trump just spoke at CPAC in Hungary. Hungary, obviously a very based country. You guys, we got to take a break for the second half of the show. We're going to be right back in just a minute. Warnings of a recession are growing louder as we near sell in May and go away. All signs appear to point to a sizable downturn for the Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ. Now, meanwhile, gold prices have been hitting all-time highs, and the rally is far from over. Now, y'all know silver is always late to the party, but once it finds momentum, it can easily outperform gold. So protect your retirement with gold or place a bullish bet on silver. Call the Proud Americans of the Patriot Gold Group today before it's too late. Just mention Red Pill 78 and this show, Red Pill News, and you're always going to get best-in-class service from Patriots Protecting Patriots. Patriot Gold Group has the no-fee-for-life IRA, where your IRA or 401k can be in physical gold and silver, and you just might be eligible for that no-fee-for-life IRA on qualifying rollovers. So give them a call today at 888-857-6092 and get your free investor guide today. Patriot Gold Group is a Consumer Affairs top-rated gold IRA dealer for 7 years in a row. Call them today at 888-857-6092. And when you support my sponsors, you support this channel. All right, we're going to skip the story on Donald Trump speaking at CPAC. Suffice to say, he did a great job, and he's totally based, and so is the government of Hungary. Who cares? In the Pill Chat has just announced, or just made me aware, of a massive tornado that has just come through Omaha, Nebraska. This is now being officially declared a natural disaster. It's a mass casualty event. We do have a number of videos of the tornado as it rips through the area, spewing debris all over the place. If you are a resident of this portion of the country, I hope you're safe. If you're unable to be here because the tornado came through, again, I would be praying for your safety, your safe return, and your good health. Also, of course, for your worldly possessions. There's nothing worse than losing everything in a natural disaster. So let's go ahead and take a look at some video from Fox.
I would say, so don't be surprised if you start to see more tornadoes pop up. And gosh, you know, I was thinking about this morning. I just had a feeling that something like this was going to happen because you get close to the area of low pressure.
All right. I want to see the tornado. Let's, here we go.
An emergency situation. Help each and everyone possible over there and keep.
This is the social Baba. Don't know this guy, but here we go.
One alert and safe.
He doesn't even have video.
The situation of a tornado isn't present in Omaha. Friends, before you proceed further, do.
All right. Well, thank you for trying. Let's see if we can get. Okay. Tornado video. No, that was on Friday. I can't go to Facebook. Touchdown in Nebraska. This one looks like it might be actual video.
New video right now into the KNBC 9 newsroom. Our first look at the power of the storm. This is new video from within the last hour. This is Lincoln, Nebraska. You can see that tornado off in the distance. It's
first of all, this guy's first mistake is he's riding a Segway in the midst of a tornado. If you're on a Segway and a tornado is coming towards you, you're probably not going to make it.
Outside the Lancaster County Event Center, that twister eventually hit the building. There were people inside. No reports of serious injuries. To the north of Omaha in Blair, Nebraska, one person is hurt after homes were damaged there. Now, more video. This is from just east of Lincoln in Cass County, Nebraska, which borders the Iowa line. A storm chaser caught this video of a twister off in the distance. There have been tornado warnings in the last hour for areas in Omaha and to the west and south of that city. And we have
all right. Apparently, there's lots of video on Twitter, so we're going to go to Twitter. X. We're going to go to X, formerly known as Twitter.
I'm going to make you a bet that the next time you get a window seat on a...
All right. And let's search for... Hold on just a second. Tornado. Okay. Here we go. All right, that doesn't even look real, but Jesus. I just got to say, big balls on the storm chasers. I mean, this honestly, it looks like it's out of the movie Twister. I can't even believe that's real. And he's just driving for it. This crazy video one time of these tornado chasers. I mean, they died, and they got sucked up into the tornado, and they were trying to escape it. It was coming right for them, and there was no road for them to go anywhere else. They got sucked up, and they died in the middle of recording this video. Now, obviously, they didn't release the portion of the video which showed them dying, but up until the moment they got sucked into the tornado, you could watch it. It was nuts.
Turn back.
Turn back.
Good point.
Wow.
Jeez, oh, geez.
Semi's overturned up here. Hey, let's get up in the sky real quick. Yeah, let's go see.
Search Lisa loves Ryan Hall. I know who Ryan Hall is. Ryan Hall. Y'all, there he is. I think I might actually... No, I don't follow him. I will follow him. Ryan's great for natural disasters, definitely. We were watching him during the hurricane when we got hit. Yep. Okay, so I guess tornado warning continues. Wow, here's some of the devastation. Oh, God. What? Oh, that's horrible. Oh, man. Yeah, that's bad. That's real bad. Okay, let's see. We'll watch one more video if we can find some good footage. If Ryan doesn't have, okay, there you can see tornado forming, coming together. That's that same video that we watched. Let me just say, if you're one of those people who just takes other people's videos and then puts them out on your own Twitter, like, I just think that's so scummy. Now, if you credit the original people, that's another thing.
Is, let me see here, he is just to the east of Arbor. He's on the exit off of Interstate 80 near Arbor Road and east of Arbor.
Hey, Ryan, we've got a tornado on the ground just northeast of Lincoln on my stream.
Okay, Chandra, Freddie's got it as well, if we want to put Freddie somewhere up here. Okay, so
Brian,
Brad,
there may be a tornado coming down right in front of us. Actually, that may be down. That may be down right in front of us.
Brad, Chris, all pretty much.
Wow, pretty. No, sharing is one thing. If you steal it from somebody and then you don't credit them, that's another thing. Yeah, you have to credit the people if you're going to just rip their video and then not give them credit for it. Like, you know, retweeting somebody else, you know, that's attribution. But when you just take somebody's, their work, something that they captured themselves, and then you don't say who you got it from, like, that's not cool. All right, so let's talk about Mitch McConnell, another very elderly man working currently in federal government. He has been doing a bit of a whistle stop tour, stumping for another nearly $100 billion that he and his friends in Congress have just gifted to other areas of the world, including Ukraine and Israel and the Middle East. He's talking specifically about this additional $61 billion that they just granted to Ukraine, which again is being used to pay their government pensions, is being used to keep their local and small businesses open. Of course, it's buying armaments and bullets and missiles and armored vehicles. It's basically, we're running the Ukrainian economy. Oh, don't forget, it's also running their secret police, their private Gestapo that's actually run by the Central Intelligence Agency. Hey, bro, thanks to Bidenomics, I'll split my paycheck with you. Also, we are so happy you're here Friday at 5. Thank you so much, Scott. I appreciate you, buddy. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Reminds me of the strange guy freebooting Zach's channel. Probably somebody's gimp. Yeah, there was this guy who was taking my videos and putting them on his Facebook account, and then he was taking like his head and like doing an AI thing and acting like my voice was his voice. It was really weird. You know, I mean, like, I don't care if you share my stuff. I mean, I appreciate it, but at least like link to me so that people can find me instead of thinking that they have to go to your Facebook page if they want to watch my videos on Rumble or on Pilled. All right. So, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, he keeps insisting that this recent package of U.S. foreign aid is a really small piece of money that we're giving on the backs of the American taxpayer. $61 billion just for Ukraine in this round alone. Let me just say that $61 billion in foreign aid not being a lot of money, well, to every single American citizen, that's a hell of a lot of money. It's more than enough money to have built a sizable high-tech border security fence along our southern border to have stopped all of these illegal aliens from coming over. But obviously, that's not what they want to do. He says, it is only 0.2% of our gross domestic product, so put that in context. It's not a whole lot of money for us, but it's a very significant step for them because it gives them the more sophisticated weapons they need to hold the Russians at bay, he said before staring blankly into space. Russians are trying to take their country, and they have an enormous incentive, and it doesn't require any of our personnel. We're not getting any Americans killed. We're helping them defend their independence and also degrade the military of one of our biggest adversaries, he said. So this bill passed on a 79-18 vote. $60 billion in aid for Ukraine, $26 billion for the war against Hamas and Israel, and approximately $4 billion designated for the Indo-Pacific region. You've also got provisions that could potentially result in the banning of TikTok, and it's going to lead the United States in a significantly weaker position. So we could protect ourselves much, much better. We could build up our own military. We could have, I don't know, maybe replenished our national fuel reserves. But no, instead, hundreds of billions of dollars now have just gone to Ukraine over that amount of time. Spike, yes, see, that's it. I don't mean to start like a debate. What I meant to say was that I see, this is specifically commentary about people that I see on Twitter, okay? What big accounts will do is they will take a piece of work that another smaller creator put a lot of work into, and they will just download that video and share it themselves and then not tell anybody about who that smaller creator is. So that smaller creator never has anybody who recognizes that they are doing the work and that they're putting out the product. Like, there's more than enough room out there for everybody to follow the people that they like. My problem is these large accounts, and I'll tell you one right now. Let me see. Well, yeah, I see Charlie Kirk doing it a lot. I see Patriot Voice doing it a lot. I see Dom Luker doing it a lot. These are big accounts, and people know who they are, and so they're following them, and they're looking for this content coming out. It's always like, breaking news! Look what I just found! But what you really have going on is smaller people who put a lot of work into it being overshadowed by these people who never tell you that these other people exist. All I'm saying is, like, tag them in it, you know, say, hey, hat tip to the person who I got this video from. Or you just say, hey, thank you so much for bringing my attention to this. It doesn't take a lot of work. That's my point here with everything. And when you re-share somebody else, here's another thing. If you're on Twitter and you can share somebody's video, like, directly from their original post, and it'll show in your post, but it won't show what they actually wrote. But it will say, you know, from this person, which allows the people who see it on your panel, on your timeline to go find that other person. Only thing I'm saying is, like, let's give credit where credit's due. You know, I right now, this is another story from the Gateway Pundit. We've got, you can see it right here on screen. I've got Gateway Pundit, and I've got Breitbart. And then it's interspersed with my own commentary. Like, you know, this video right here from Joe Biden lying, this is C-SPAN. Of course, you know, you guys see me on screen real time looking this stuff up. I pull somebody up on Twitter. I say who that person is. I want you guys to know, because if you like the content, I want you to be able to follow them. I apologize if this is something that we covered too much, because I wasn't even trying to. But when it comes to the money that we've given to Ukraine, the same day that they gave that $60 billion, Ukraine then directly attacked Russia inside their borders. They got a bit of a bold, you know, small man complex, if you will. They bombed a Russian oil field inside the Smolensk region of Russia. Of course, they wouldn't have done that if they didn't have this $60 billion. We could end the war in Ukraine right now if we took Russia and Ukraine and came to the peace table and said, hey, you know, what is it going to take to stop this conflict? Just like Donald Trump would do if he was here. Just like Donald Trump did with the Abraham Accords in bringing peace to the Middle East. Donald Trump is the only president in my lifetime to not start a war or to not indiscriminately kill other people. Number one, Indiana Dad. Sorry about that last e-link. I thought it was about funding education of trans individuals for future leaders. My apologies. Oh, it's no problem. It's no problem. Not a big deal. I mean, it was still applicable to what we were talking about. You're good. You're good. And thank you for the donation. Appreciate it. All right. So talk about some karmic retribution right here. Adam Schiff was supposed to speak in San Francisco, and he had all of his stuff that he needed in his vehicle. Well, while he was not with his vehicle, his car was ransacked, it was broken into, and everything that he had inside was stolen. So Adam Schiff, having his car vandalized and robbed in San Francisco last week, meant that he had to attend a dinner party without the proper attire. Now, the San Francisco Chronicle reported that Schiff was given quite the rude introduction to that crime-ridden city as he works to drum up support for his senatorial campaign. Now, the reason he was in San Francisco is because he's running for Dianne Feinstein's vacated seat after she finally died after being wheeled around like a reanimated corpse for several months. So listen to this. Hello to the city. Goodbye to your luggage. That was senatorial candidate Adam Schiff's rude introduction to San Francisco's vexing reputation for car burglaries. We've talked about this so many times before. I had my friend from San Francisco on not that long ago. He's going to be coming back on the show too. So this meant that Adam Schiff was going to a black tie dinner party. He ended up having to show up in a short sleeve shirt and a hiking vest. Because he didn't have anything to wear. He didn't have his suit. He didn't have a tux. He was basically left in the lurch. I absolutely love to see politicians actually fulfill their own destiny after they have created the quagmire that we find ourselves in, only to become victims of the very policies that they've implemented. So I hope sincerely that the people of San Francisco recognize that voting for Democrats once again, and not voting for America First Republicans, is going to result in more of the same. I think virtually all across the country, people understand this, they feel this, and, you know, they're totally down with it. And they're tired of what they have right now. People are waking up. And for some of them, it requires things like, I don't know, having your car broken into over and over and over again. At what point, how many times is it going to have to take for your car's windows to be smashed and all of your worldly possessions to be stolen for you to finally recognize that maybe defunding the police was not the best idea? Maybe the answer is refunding the police and getting rid of the ineffectual communist leaders you've put into office. People like Maricopa County Rhino Stephen Richter. Now, Maricopa County Rhino Stephen Richter has been in the news since 2020. That's when I first became aware of him. I really wasn't, you know, very clear on who he was before then. But he's been involved in this legal battle with Carrie Lake for quite some time. And they were back in court on Wednesday. Now, they're fighting to obtain a hearing on damages before a jury in a First Amendment hating trial. Rhino, Maricopa County Recorder, Stephen Richter has a defamation lawsuit against Carrie Lake, and Richter and his lawyers are seeking damages in the millions of dollars. Now, you guys, I also haven't said this yet, but Gateway Pundit just had to file for bankruptcy because they are being sued by Ruby Freeman. Ruby Freeman and her daughter are the women from Georgia who were seen on video doing what looked like mishandling of ballots. Ruby Freeman specifically appeared allegedly to be counting stacks of ballots multiple times. Now, my lying eyes deceive me, I suppose, because she sued Rudy Giuliani for talking about that, and she won a verdict of like $148 million. Well, apparently Ruby and her daughter are attempting to do the same thing to the Gateway Pundit here, Jim and Joe Hoft. So Jim Hoft has announced that the Gateway Pundit is filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy in an effort to stave off any such lawsuit before Ruby Freeman comes in and just, you know, takes ownership of the Gateway Pundit and publishes the webpage with her face with a stack of ballots on it or something. So they have been, the Gateway Pundit has been reporting on the issue of election fraud for a very long time. My friend CanCon, he works there, obviously. He does great work there. But during a 2021 op-ed, Stephen Richter had submitted to the National Review magazine, he revealed that he believes that the First Amendment is the biggest threat to elections and democracy. Can you imagine an elected official saying that much? He also said that he thinks his constituents are idiots and that, quite literally, this is a quote. This is not allegedly. This is not in my opinion. This is Stephen Richter's hot take. It may be time to revisit our First Amendment jurisprudence. Now, Jack Butler, who's editor of the National Review, he rejected that draft op-ed, and he cited this attack on freedom of speech as the reason why. However, Richter apparently gave him a similarly written speech, and ironically, in commemoration of Constitution Day, to students at Maricopa County Community College, where it was approved by the district. The school district saw the language that Stephen Richter was using, talking about limiting the First Amendment, saying that the First Amendment is the biggest threat to safe and secure elections. I would say maybe it's the biggest threat to the illusion of safe and secure elections, because we don't have safe and secure elections. There's no such thing as an election that we can count on in the United States of America as long as people like Stephen Richter are running them, as long as electronic voting machines that cannot be audited are being used, as long as there is no paper trail, as long as there is no chain of custody. How can we accept the results of the elections they give us, especially when someone like Joseph Robinette Biden, a serial liar, not allegedly, not just in my opinion, but verifiably, Joe Biden, serial liar, an elderly man who appears to have dementia or Alzheimer's, when he is supposed to have received 81 million votes. 81 million votes of real live living people? I think not. Nobody believes that. And now that we're closer to 2024 and you've seen what life under a Biden regime is like, even fewer people believe it than they did back in 2020. So Stephen Richer is suing Carrie Lake. Carrie Lake had recently pled no contest in a Lawfare defamation case that was brought against her by Stephen Richer and a group called Protect Democracy. Now, their name might make you think that they're actually trying to protect democracy, but the truth is they are a far-left group that is tied to George Soros and many other people who are connected with Obama, they have subpoenaed and used the process of this court case to try to hamper Carrie Lake and her ability to speak and to actually get out there and campaign. They're trying to dig through all of her personal communications and, of course, the inside workings of her campaign. And most importantly, they want to keep her spending money in the same way they're trying to do to Donald Trump right now. So Stephen Richer, he's constantly out there spewing his bad takes about how the First Amendment needs to be limited. He says that Carrie Lake hurt my feelings, and that by people saying that the election was rigged, oh, yucks, I can't believe it. We're going to sue everybody we can. They're not suing anybody because they don't like what's being said about them. They're suing them as an obstructionist tactic to make sure that people stop talking about the theft of elections in America and the theft of elections in a dirty state like Arizona. Dirty because of its corrupt politicians. Beautiful state. I love Arizona. Arizona is gorgeous. There is some places in Arizona, Lisa and I were thinking about moving before we settled on Florida, but I decided the dry heat was a little too much. I need just a little bit of moisture in the air. But anyway, either way, Stephen Richer doing whatever he can. Now, also very, very important, in the same way that people have come to believe the election of 2020 was stolen, in the same way they've come to believe that Joe Biden did not receive 81 million votes, in the same way they've come to believe that our elections are not safe, that our elections are not secure, that electronic voting machines are not a good thing, most people now also believe that Donald Trump is being treated differently by the American judicial system. CNN, lefty CNN, did a poll, and before you say it, I love telling you that I enjoy reading polls because they give me, and I think they should give you, a particular insight into the general public at large. What is CNN? Well, primarily, they're a fake news organization who cater directly to radical left-wing morons. They don't cater to the right wing. They don't cater to God-fearing patriots that make up the first, the America First movement. No, they're going to cater to people who want to eat their bullshit with a spoon. And in a CNN poll, only 13% of the respondents say that they believe that Donald Trump is being treated the same as other defendants. Think about that. Among CNN's audience, 87% of their audience believe that Donald Trump is being treated differently. That means 87% of their audience believe that Lawfare is being used against him. Can you guys just soak that in for me for just a moment? This tells me that we may not be reaching people on every single issue, but on some of the most important issues, we are reaching them. I'd love to see what CNN viewers have to say about the plandemic and how they feel about getting jabbed up by the time they got their third booster. So anyways, 13% of the respondents believe that Donald Trump is being treated the same as other criminal defendants. This survey confirms President Trump's arguments that efforts to bankrupt him and throw him in jail are, in fact, politically motivated. And it's all being run from the White House. President Trump, as always, speaking out about his plight, says this is a witch hunt, and it's a shame, and it comes out of Washington. It does. We've already learned that. We knew that. But every single day, as more information comes out, it becomes more and more obvious. It's a coordination with Washington. Everything, including the DA's office, it's in coordination with Washington. Now, here are some more findings from that same survey. 34%. Said Trump is being treated more harshly than other defendants. And he is. 34% said Trump is being treated more leniently than other defendants. Those people don't really exist. Nobody thinks Donald Trump is being treated more leniently. Totally ridiculous. 19% said that they had not heard enough to say, and 0% had no opinion. Now, the poll also found that a majority of Americans were not confident in a fair outcome for President Trump. 44% had confidence in the jury chosen for the case, saying that they could reach a fair verdict. But 56% were skeptical that a fair outcome is in the cards. That means that 56% of those people who watch CNN said, I don't think that Donald Trump is going to be given a fair chance. I think that Donald Trump's jury is probably going to be stacked against him. Now, how many people were in this survey? Well, they talked to about 1,200 adults. They spoke between April 18th and the 23rd. It's got a 3.4% margin of error. You can bet that CNN oversamples for as radical left-wing people as they possibly can. So the true results of this survey are even better for Donald Trump than what they're actually reporting. Now, we talked yesterday about former DOJ attorney Colangelo, who is now taking a demotion and working with attorney Alvin Bragg's office in New York County District Court. And, of course, Colangelo is thought to be the real architect behind the hush money trial that Donald Trump is currently enduring. He will be investigated by a number of oversight committees in Congress. I hope that happens sooner rather than later. But there is clearly a coordination between the White House and then various federal offices and these district offices as well. The Department of Justice is involved. I'm sure the FBI is involved. The White House is certainly involved. In the case of the documents case, NARA, of course, is involved. And Judge Cannon unsealing those records yesterday have even produced more wicked fruit. It also turns out, and we had suspected this earlier, that Jack Smith, his lead prosecutor, had threatened President Trump's valet, and then they tried to bribe him in exchange for his testimony against President Trump. This story had come out previously, but now as a result of these documents that have been unsealed, we learn it directly from the horse's mouth, with Judge Eileen Cannon yesterday unsealing more records related to the case against Donald Trump with these classified documents. It shows these allegations. Jack Smith's prosecutor, Jay Brett, threatened Stanley Woodward. Stanley Woodward was an attorney, he is the attorney for the driver for President Trump, Walt Nauta. It was Stanley Woodward who came forward previously and said it. So Jay Brett tried to bribe Stanley Woodward, and he threatened him with a sinking judicial nomination if he didn't get Walt Nauta to testify against President Trump. Upon Mr. Woodward's arrival at Main Justice, he was led to a conference room where Mr. Brett awaited him with what appeared to be a folder containing information about Mr. Woodward. Mr. Brett thereupon told Mr. Woodward he didn't consider him to be a Trump lawyer, and he further said he was aware that Mr. Woodward had been recommended to President Biden for an appointment to the Superior Court of the District of Columbia. Mr. Brett followed up with words to the effect of, I wouldn't want you to do anything to mess that up. Now, the DOJ has been forced to respond to a complaint that had been filed under seal in D.C. District Court by Stanley Woodward when he had originally come out and said, hey, they tried to bribe me. It was in regards to him filing this complaint. Now, DOJ prosecutor Jay Brett bribing him, that's certainly not something that you would expect to see in a normal trial. And according to Real Clear Investigations, the DOJ responding to this really has not resulted in much other than to say, hey, guess what? We could do whatever we want. We're the Department of Justice. Lava 20 says, thank you for the surprise Friday afternoon show. How do I do a rant greater than $1 from the smartphone? If somebody can direct Lava on, well, I guess let me take a look here. I think that there might be like a slider or something. Let me go to my Rumble app. We'll give it a shot. All right. So if I can find my own show, there we are. All right. So. Okay, so you hit the dollar sign. Yeah, you hit the dollar sign, and then you slide the slider over. You can go from $1 up to $500 all at once. Now, I don't expect you to donate $500 on a Rumble stream, but the larger the rant, the longer the rant will stay on screen. Let me just demonstrate this for you. See if you guys, now you're not really going to be able to see it. It's too bright. All right. But anyways, trust me, there's a slider right there with a dot on the $1 and you just slide it to the right and you can make it pretty much whatever you want. Thank you very much, Lava. I appreciate you. Chrono viewer. Yeah, it's Friday at 1 p.m. What year is it? It's 2024. All right. So, very happy to see there is more confirmation coming out from these documents. Also, obviously, Donald Trump still in the New York hush money case, so-called hush money fake news case. Now, Judge Marchand has stated that he's going to be considering four additional violations of President Trump's gag order, and he set a new hearing. Also, I might add, Judge Marchand's wicked treatment of Donald Trump, forcing him to not only miss his son Barron's high school graduation, which Donald Trump may just skip the court and go to his son's graduation. He's also got to miss Melania's birthday. Like what a jerk, you know? I mean, like forcing you to miss your wife's birthday, just not cool. So, Alvin Bragg had claimed previously that President Trump violated the gag order seven more times, and Bragg's office asked the court to impose a $1,000 sanction for each violation, three prior Truth Social posts. He ordered President Trump to take them down. He warned him that, you know, any further violations, he's going to put him in jail. And this is all referring to President Trump calling Michael Cohen a serial perjurer. Excuse me, I forgot that I wasn't on the screen. That's not allegedly in my opinion, or it's allegedly in Donald Trump's opinion. I mean, it is fact. It's objective fact. Michael Cohen is a perjurer. And more than once, he has perjured himself over and over and over again. He's like a serial liar. Liar, liar, pants on fire. That's Michael Cohen all day long. So last Thursday, prosecutors said that President Trump violated the gag order seven more times since Monday. And he posted to Truth Social on Wednesday, they are catching undercover liberal activists lying to the judge in order to get on the Trump jury. Now, Judge Marchand held a hearing on the original gag order violations, but he held off on issuing a ruling. That ruling is set for May 1st and the new hearing as well. So you can bet probably they're going to say Trump violated. They're going to say that he may have to spend time in jail. I hope they do it. I hope they put him in jail, and I hope that President Trump use it as a lightning rod to force Americans to wake up. Now, of course, I want Donald Trump to be safe, happy, healthy, secure, but he's going to have the Secret Service with him, and he's going to be alone in a private area of the jail. They're not going to put him in the Gen Pop. They can't do that. Now, he blasted the judge earlier this week by saying the gag order imposed on me, a political candidate running for the highest office in the land, is totally unconstitutional. Nothing like this has ever happened before. The conflicted judge's friends and party members can say whatever they want about me, but I'm not allowed to respond. The trial is rigged, and I should never have been allowed to take place on a charge that virtually every legal scholar and expert say is bogus. There is no crime. This is a political witch hunt. Election interference. That right there. Oh, Lava 20. Thank you so much. Thanks for pointing out how to donate more generously. I had RP78 withdrawal most of the week. You are the best. Thank you, Lava. Hopefully you were able to catch up with yesterday's show. And if you didn't, then the reason I was gone all week is because I had no internet for 3 days and I was unable to stream. I'm also unable to use a hotspot because we live in the middle of BFE and I have a metal roof. So I don't have reliable cell phone service. It's not always necessarily a bad thing, but in this instance, it was definitely driving me crazy. All right. So continuing on here, in the same courtroom in the fake news hush money trial in New York, a man by the name of David Pecker has been testifying, and it would appear that his testimony is torpedoing the case that the state and Alvin Bragg are making against President Trump. It's pretty obvious, as soon as these charges came down, and even more so once the trial began, that this lawsuit against President Trump was never really a case against President Trump. It was really a case against the American people, because they want to make President Trump unelectable. They want to take him out, and they want to put push forward with this case and destroy him in whatever way they can. So now they are hoping that with a corrupt court and with a jury pool that is most likely stacked against him in the worst way possible, they're going to find Donald Trump guilty of these crimes that are not crimes, of these crimes that Donald Trump allegedly committed, but he didn't. President Trump didn't do his own books. President Trump is not balancing his own checkbook even. I mean, he's got people to do those things. He's certainly not doing the accounting at his multi-billion dollar international corporation. So, David Pecker, he is the former CEO of American Media until August 2020. He was the publisher of the National Enquirer and a number of other publications, and he testified that Trump had no idea what he was talking about when he asked him about reimbursing Michael Cohen for the Stormy Daniels payment. He also said the catch and kill scheme had been devised by him and Michael Cohen, that Donald Trump had nothing to do with it. So Fox News report, actually, let me see, do we have a video clip we can watch? Yeah, we do have a video clip.
Pecker also said when he spoke to Trump about Trump reimbursing Michael Cohen for paying adult film actress Stormy Daniels, Trump told him he had no idea what Pecker was talking about. Pecker testified again about purchasing the lifetime rights to former Playboy model Karen McDougal's story as well. He said he did that in part because he and Cohen had concerns it would hurt Trump's campaign. Notably, he did not say those concerns came from Trump himself.
So everybody, except for the known liars, say that Donald Trump had nothing to do with this scheme, nothing to do with the effort to keep Stormy Daniels' story secret, even Karen McDougal's story a secret. And even if he had something to do with it, he's a grown-ass man, and it's his money. He can do with it as he pleases. The way that it was scheduled in his books, it wasn't even illegal, and it never raised any red flags. Nobody ever said anything, and it happened so long ago. It's so obvious that this case is a big, fat fake. Donald Trump did nothing wrong. Donald Trump is not being tried for actually committing crimes. He's being tried for having the balls to run for president again in light of the fact that they have stolen this country and they essentially removed him from office in a fascist coup and installed a puppet leader named Joseph Robinette Biden, who's truly being controlled behind the scenes by Barack Hussein Obama. So we didn't talk about Justice Samuel Alito and his line of questioning yesterday in the Supreme Court oral arguments surrounding President Trump's question of immunity. So Justice Alito was questioning if criminal prosecution of former presidents would be a destabilizing force on the country. I would say yes, obviously it is in certain instances. In the way it's being done against President Trump, it's certainly a destabilizing force. And President Trump, although he was impeached twice, he was never convicted, and so therefore there is nothing for them to prosecute him on. They are grasping at straws. This is a last ditch effort to try to destroy him in the minds of the American people, to bankrupt him so that he can't run for president, and to essentially take him off the ballot. We know this, we know this, we know this. Yes, Zach, thank you for saying it again, but I demand that we keep saying it until President Trump finally gets the justice he deserved. So let's go ahead and take a listen to Samuel Alito and his opinion on just what exactly. Wait a second. No, I don't think that's the clip that I'm thinking of. Okay, so I'm sorry. I thought that there was a clip of Samuel Alito in here. I'll just read it to you. So, Samuel Alito questioning whether or not criminal prosecution of an incumbent who narrowly lost an election, if that could lead to a destabilizing force in a country, as opposed to an incumbent knowing that he could leave office peacefully. Well, Alito made the remark yesterday, as the oral arguments were being heard. Obviously, President Trump's attorneys arguing that he is immune from prosecution on charges of attempting to overturn the results of a 2020 presidential election. If he wanted to overturn the results of the presidential election, he could have done that. He was the president of the United States. He had the power to do a lot more than he did. All he did was talk to people, ask them to investigate, look into true factual allegations of election fraud and election manipulation and election interference. So during these arguments, it's pretty notable that I felt certainly that a majority of the justices actually agreed with President Trump and his attorneys. Alito said, if a president has the authority to pardon himself before leaving office and the D.C. circuit is right there, there is no immunity from prosecution, won't the predictable result be that presidents on the last couple of days in office are just going to pardon themselves from anything that they might have conceivably get charged with committing in the future? And Dreeben said, no, I doubt that. It presupposes a regime that we have never had, except for President Nixon, and as alleged in the indictment here. Presidents who are conscious of having engaged in wrongdoing and seeking to shield themselves, I think the political consequences of a president who asserted a right of self-pardon that has never been recognized, that seems to contradict a bedrock principle of our law that no person shall be the judge in their own case. Those are adequate deterrents, I think. So this kind of dystopian regime is not going to evolve, he continued, which prompted Alito to pose the question. Let me end with just a question about what is required for the functioning of a stable democratic society, which is something that we all want. Well, I'm sure you would agree with me that a stable democratic society requires that a candidate who loses an election, even by a close one, even a hotly contested one, leave office peacefully if that candidate is the incumbent. And that perfectly sums up exactly what Donald Trump did. He didn't try to overturn an election. He didn't do anything overt to stay in office, and he could have done that if he so wanted. All right, Alito said. Now, if an incumbent who loses a very close election, hotly contested election, knows that the real possibility after leaving office is not that the president is going to be able to go off into a peaceful retirement, but that the president may be criminally prosecuted by a bitter political opponent, will that not lead us into a cycle that destabilizes the functioning of our country and our democracy? I would argue that yes, it does, and yes, it has. We are witnessing it play out right now. And we can look around the world and find countries where we have seen this process, where the loser gets thrown in jail. Let's take a look at what's happening in Brazil right now, in many other banana republic-type countries. So, Breitbart News reported that a federal trial court ruled in Jack Smith's favor that Trump is not immune from prosecution, but Smith's prosecution in D.C. has been on hold until the Supreme Court weighs in. That's why the results of the Supreme Court oral arguments that were heard yesterday are so vitally important, because if they decide that President Trump is not immune in some fashion, this D.C. trial is going to be held as quickly as possible. They're going to try to get it done before the election. Now, Kavanaugh had asked Jack Smith's prosecutor about Barack Obama and why he was never charged for drone strikes against civilians. Now, in the case of this lawyer working for the Department of Justice, he essentially said, well, Obama checked with the attorneys, and the attorney said it was okay. It was okay to kill American citizens because they were planning to kill other American citizens. So he went ahead and asked. He was given the okay to do it, and now we're here.
How about President Obama's drone strikes?
So the Office of Legal Counsel looked at this very carefully and determined that, number one, the federal murder statute does apply to the executive branch. The president wasn't personally carrying out the strike, but the aiding and abetting laws are broad. And it determined that a public authority exception that's built into statutes and that applied particularly to the murder statute because it talks about unlawful killing did not apply to the drone strike. So this is actually the way that the system should function. The Department of Justice takes criminal law very seriously. It runs it through the analysis.
He said that with like no hint of irony.
The Department of Justice takes criminal actions very seriously.
They just don't take it seriously when it's being done by the guy that they're rooting for, or his son, or the illegals that they are allowing to take over the country, or when those illegals are raping children and bringing drugs into communities. No, you know, they don't take it seriously then, only when it's Donald Trump. Again, if Donald Trump had not run for president this time around, they would have left him alone. They absolutely would not have gone after him.
Very carefully with established principles. It documents them. It explains them. And then the president can go forward in accordance with it. And there is no risk of prosecution for that course of activity.
So do you remember going back to the election of 2000, the hanging chads, when there was some contention about who had won Florida? Both Al Gore and George W. Bush filed court cases attempting to have themselves installed as presidents. Al Gore claimed victory and George Bush claimed victory. So why is it that there was, you know, no criminal charges that were filed then? Ildi the Hun says, I've been Zachathoning today. Much love to RP fam. Good to see you out there. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate the support. So obviously, this is a very different situation. Now, Clarence Thomas, I was very eager to hear what Clarence Thomas had to say. And, you know, typically, because he's so based, he poked quite a few holes in Special Prosecutor Jack Smith's ultimate theory that President Trump is the first president to face criminal charges because former presidents have never committed any crimes. Oh, he's the first president in history to commit crimes. If other people would have committed crimes, we would have gone after him. So Michael Dreeben went before the Supreme Court and argued that presidents do not have immunity for their official acts conducted during the time they're in the White House. And he further argued that no former president besides Trump has ever committed any crimes. Now, Clarence Thomas said, over the not so distant past, certain presidents have engaged in various activities, coups, or operations like Operation Mongoose when I was a teenager, and yet there were no prosecutions. Do you know what Operation Mongoose is? It's a CIA covert operation that was authorized under President Dwight D. Eisenhower, and it continued under the Kennedy administration. And during that operation, the CIA actually committed terrorist attacks against Cuban villagers, innocent people, and civilians. They attempted a number of assassination attempts against Cuban dictator Fidel Castro at that time. The Bay of Pigs, anyone? Bay of Pigs. The CIA attempted to overthrow Fidel Castro by orchestrating a violent revolution in Cuba. And it was largely because Kennedy refused to back them up that I think they decided it was time to go ahead and just take his head off. So the lawyer representing Jack Smith asserting that President Trump is the first president to commit crimes or to do things that were overtly illegal if you wouldn't have been in office is total BS. And I am so happy that Clarence Thomas brought up something like this. I mean, the CIA, again, is the heart of the deep state here in the United States and around the globe. They are the body of the octopus, if you will. So this covert CIA operation, it got backlash at the time. Attorney General, who was RFK, said that he discovered that the CIA hired a member of the Italian mafia to actually assassinate Castro. The federal government is very fond of doing business with mobsters and criminals when it benefits them to do so. They also discovered that the CIA had a plan to bomb areas of Miami where Cuban refugees were living. That's right. The CIA had a plot to commit terrorist attacks here on American soil in Florida and kill Cuban refugees so that they could then blame Fidel Castro and go on in there and just get rid of him. So RFK reported his findings to Kennedy. He suspended Operation Mongoose. And then shortly after that, he was assassinated by the CIA. Now, Ketanji Brown Jackson, I was also interested to see where her mind was at with all of this, but not because she's based, because she's a freaking moron. Now, John Sauer, the attorney for President Trump, he literally humiliated Ketanji Brown Jackson during his oral arguments. So his lawyer arguing that President Trump is immune and Ketanji Brown Jackson responding, many people believe that she is the dumbest person on the Supreme Court. Of course, she doesn't know how to define a woman, so we'll just call her a person because I don't know if she's a woman either, to be quite honest with you. She set herself up because she tried to argue that future presidents will be emboldened to commit certain crimes if they had immunity from prosecution. Presidents from the beginning of time understood that that's a possibility. That might be what has kept this office from turning into the kind of crime center that I'm envisioning. But once we say no criminal liability, Mr. President, you can do whatever you want, I'm worried that we would have a worse problem than the problem of the president feeling constrained to follow the law while he's in office. So John Sauer said, I respectfully disagree because the regime you've described is the regime we've lived and operated under for the last 234 years. There has not been an expectation based on 234 years of unbroken political boom. Let's take a listen.
Strife, which will
no. I'm also let me put this worry on the table. If the potential for criminal liability is taken off the table, wouldn't there be a significant risk that future presidents would be emboldened to commit crimes with abandon while they're in office? It's right now the fact that we're having this debate because OLC has said that presidents might be prosecuted. Presidents from the beginning of time have understood that that's a possibility. That might be what has kept this office from turning into the kind of crime center that I'm envisioning. But once we say, no criminal liability, Mr. President, you can do whatever you want, I'm worried that we would have a worse problem than the problem of the president feeling constrained to follow the law while he's in office.
I respectfully disagree with that because the regime you've described is the regime we've operated under for 234 years. There has not been an expectation based on 234 years of unbroken political.
All right, let me ask you another question.
She's like, I'm going to interrupt you because you just blew my argument out of the water. Yeah, so presidents since the beginning of this country have done things that if the public would have known about them, they would have been very uncomfortable with. And again, case in point, lying about weapons of mass destruction. George W. Bush led America into a decades-long war in the Middle East. Because of his lies, we overthrew and destabilized a country that may have been run by a despot, but was not a center for death and terrorism as it is today. Hillary Clinton, she essentially oversaw the destabilization and the murder of Muammar Gaddafi, also another stable leader in a otherwise unstable continent, that being Africa. Muammar Gaddafi also set to bring a massive water project to the entire continent of Africa, also preparing to extricate himself and his nation from the global laundering of money system known as fractional reserve banking. He was going to put his entire nation on a gold standard. And for some reason, every time you have a world leader who wants to do something outrageous like that, well, it turns out that the United States government has a vested interest in stopping their tyrannical rule. And we just continue to do it. Nobody has ever been prosecuted for it before. I don't like it. But President Trump didn't do anything like that at all.
About this clear statement line of questioning. First of all, I didn't see you argue that below. I don't know. I understand that you have that set of in your briefs here, but did you argue before the D.C. Circuit something about a clear statement with respect to statutes?
Yes. In our separately filed motion to dismiss based on statutory grounds, we extensively argued not just this clear statement rule, but a whole panel.
Right, but that's not the question presented in this case. The question presented in this case comes out of your motion for immunity. So to bring in now an argument that you didn't raise below, it seems to me you forfeited it, no?
I believe it's fairly included within the question presented. Especially,
why?
Especially because the court expanded the question presented from what either of the parties submitted.
But not to statutory interpretation. I mean, that argument goes to statutory avoidance, constitutional avoidance, statutory interpretation. You asked for immunity, which is a totally different thing.
I think they're very closely related logically. The question is, does immunity exist and to what extent does it? And the argument is, immunity at least exists to the extent that it raises a grave constitutional question and that triggers the clear statement rule. That's a really
tight logical relationship. But that's totally circular. You use that argument to avoid
So Ketanji Brown Jackson is obviously not going to be fighting with President Trump. I want you to look at this picture of the Supreme Court. Hold on. Let me go to this view right here. Look at Clarence Thomas. He's like, I'm only here because I have to be. He's like, this is a lifetime appointment. and look, I'm sitting next to this moron and this moron and these morons over here. I'm only here because I have to be. Okay. All right. So, we're going to go ahead and now take a look at a little bit of commentary that I mentioned before. It really does appear that the majority of Supreme Court justices are going to find in favor of President Trump. We might be looking at a 5-4 Trump favor, a 6-3 Trump favor, but the Supreme Court has not made their ruling yet, and it may not even come before the classified documents case or the DC case even take place. So, these oral arguments, in my opinion, as I listened to them, it did appear that the questions that were posed by, that's the wrong screen, guys. Hold on. The questions that were posed by the Supreme Court justices, it really did look good in terms of, favoring President Trump. Now, the arguments, show that the majority of justices seem to agree that President Trump and presidents in general should enjoy a scope of immunity after their term in office. And the real question here is going to be, what type of a standard are they planning to establish? This is clearly something they're going to want to consider, and they're going to want to consider it as long as they need to. If they institute a test, it would vacate or strike the lower court decision that former presidents have no immunity, and then it would send the case back to trial court. And then that court would undergo a painstaking point-by-point analysis of each fact to determine if immunity actually exists. Now, that could take months, and the Supreme Court appears likely to hold that decision itself. It would then be, of course, appealable, and it may come back to the Supreme Court. However, if the court takes it, and they ensure the final outcome of a Trump trial in D.C., well before the November 5th election day, it would be a major blow to Jack Smith. It would be a major blow to Joe Biden and, of course, the entire Department of Justice. Now, they did explore a number of scenarios by which a president might potentially actually be charged with a crime. Gorsuch pressed the DOJ attorney, Michael Dreeben, on a hypothetical scenario of a president leading a mostly peaceful civil rights protest that could obstruct an official proceeding. So let's say a president then could be prosecuted for the conduct he described after he leaves office, he wanted to know. Probably not. Oh, it's a civil rights protest, so no, he probably wouldn't be charged. But there are core kinds of activities that are among presidential duties, and that would be included in them. Now, there are other justices. They probed if the institution of the presidency could be crippled if presidents are subject to criminal prosecution, like Justice Alito did. If the presidents that leave office do not have some assurances that the incoming administration is not going to change their mind on policy that, you know, was generally accepted before when they were in office, then it will truly be open season. That's exactly the type of behavior that we're seeing right now. It would place presidents in a really precarious situation. And as President Trump has said, it would essentially neuter presidents. It would create a sort of puppet office where it's all ceremonial. They get elected and they're just there, but they're afraid to do anything because they have the fear of leaving office and then the person who replaces them deciding that what they've done they didn't like, just as they've done to President Trump, and then charging him, whether or not a true crime actually existed. Now, presidents have a lot of tough choices to make, tough choices about deciding when and how to enforce the law. In order to do that, they have to make decisions about questions that at times may be unsettled. Presidents need to think on the fly. They shouldn't necessarily have to wait for the courts to make a decision on something, especially when they oftentimes take so long, when Congress is so ineffective, and oftentimes they only make decisions on things and legislate on things when it directly affects them in a positive way. So they have information that's available to them, and they need to have the ability to make a decision in that moment. And if they don't have that ability, then the office of the presidency will mean absolutely nothing. Now, Alito had a number of reservations about the claims that were made by Attorney Dreeben, the man representing the Department of Justice. He argued that a president has access to legal advice about everything he does. Well, that's not necessarily true. Now, just because a lawyer at the Department of Justice tells him it's okay, you can go ahead and do it, it doesn't mean that a successive president is not going to say, hey, I didn't like what that previous president did. And in fact, I want you to arrest the president and arrest the DOJ attorney that told him that what he was doing was legal, because I've decided now that it's not. That's, again, what we see here in the case with President Trump. Joe Biden and his White House have decided that they want to get Trump, and so they're going to criminalize these actions that on their own would be benign or would be within the scope of their duties. Is it a duty, and I think you know the answer to this, for a president of the United States to assure us that we have safe and secure elections? And if they don't appear to be safe and secure, to ask for investigations? I would say absolutely, 100%. We expect our president to do something just like that. So Alito cited the old saw about indicting a ham sandwich. We've talked about that on so many occasions. You come across a lot of cases where the U.S. attorney or another federal prosecutor really wanted to indict a case, and the grand jury refused to do so. Now, Dreeben acknowledged, and then Alito said, every once in a while, there's an eclipse, too. Now, these arguments appear to be positive for President Trump. However, of course, because the Supreme Court has not issued their ruling, we're all guessing in the meantime. You guys, it is 7:15. I've got to call it there because I've got another show coming up at 9 p.m. Let me give my final thank yous to our friends over here at Pilled.net. Thank you so much to Anondoc77, who says, I look forward to seeing your shows daily and tell others to watch. I hope it helps. It does help. Definitely. The fact that you're here, the fact you're hitting that red pill, you're telling people to watch the show, you're sharing the show, that is about the best thing I could hope for. It's no $50,000, Tracy Beans, but I'm kidding. I kid. Anyways, let's see. Sean Joe, thank you for 1, 2, 3 cookies. Thank you, bro. Appreciate you. Nikki the Greek, thank you for the cookie. Porpoiseful, thank you for the cookie. Sean Joe, thank you for 2 more cookies. Liberty Bells dropped a cookie and said, Michigan, I think, did you say my hall? M-I-Hal? I'm not sure what you said, but thank you for the support. Who Cares says, high five, Zach and Lisa. Thank you for the coverage of the NATOs. Yes, you are very welcome. Thank you for letting me know about that. Long and short of it, guys, the fact that you're here means everything to me. Please like the show. Please share the show. Please let people know that this is a great show to watch, that you guys have a lot of fun. If you are listening to the audio version of this podcast, you can find my channel at pilled.net/redpill78, also at rumble.com/redpill78, on a number of other platforms, and as at redpill78 on social media platforms like X, Truth Social, Getter, Gab, and probably a couple others. But you can find everything at my website, redpill78news.com. You can also donate through the website. I don't get notifications, but believe me, I do get a report, and I see it at the end of the month. And thank you so much to everybody who has supported through the website. I really appreciate you guys. And with that, I think we're going to go ahead and say, hopefully, I will see you tonight at 9 p.m. when I interview my good friend, Chicago conservative activist, Terry. Oh, God, Terry, how could I forget your last name? Terry Newsom. God, there we go. Terry Newsom. Be here at 9. I'll see you then. Peace, good luck, and God bless.